This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Can there be genocidal intent on the part of a state that actively investigates, prosecutes, and punishes soldiers and officers who are accused of wrongdoing?
That's Myanmar's leader Aung San Suu Kyi defending her government against genocide accusations in the International Court of Justice. Details coming up. Also, analysts have warned that continuing power cuts in South Africa could plunge the country's economy into recession. And thousands of protesters marched through central Algiers today, demanding the cancellation of tomorrow's presidential election. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Myanmar's leader and Nobel Peace Prize laureate Aung San Suu Kyi has defended her government's actions before the International Court of Justice against genocide accusations. Speaking at the court today in The Hague, she called the case against her country incomplete and misleading. Martha van der Wolf reports from London.
Aung San Suu Kyi defended Myanmar's leadership against claims that genocide is happening in the country.
Can there be genocidal intent on the part of a state that actively investigates, prosecutes, and punishes soldiers and officers who are accused of wrongdoing?
The hearings of the case against Myanmar at the United Nations highest court started on Tuesday and included detailed accusations of mass killings, torture and rape against members of the Muslim Rohingya minority. The Gambia brought the case to the court to ask for protection for the Rohingya. More than 700,000 have fled to neighboring Bangladesh since 2017. Aung San Suu Kyi, once seen as one of the world's greatest human rights defenders, argued Wednesday that the internal conflict might at most have led to potential violations of international humanitarian law. Alison Smith of the NGO No Peace Without Justice says she is eager to see what the court makes of the defense argument.
The fact that there may have been a conflict does not preclude that there might have been genocide. But also the experiences of the Rohingya that we have been speaking with that were unveiled by the Gambia yesterday through the UN fact-finding mission do not speak to an armed conflict, but instead do speak to that genocide has taken place.
A UN fact-finding mission in 2018 found that Myanmar's army showed genocidal intent in its military operations. Hla Kiao is chairman of the European Rohingya Council and demonstrated in front of the court during Aung San Suu Kyi's statement. He says this case is the beginning towards justice for the Rohingya.
We are expecting justice from international community. International Court of Justice will be taking all of the measures to take the action against genocide against our people. Therefore, in this International Court of Justice, we are hoping for justice for Rohingya people as quick as possible. At the end of the day, truth will come out.
Aung San Suu Kyi heads the Myanmar civilian government. Myanmar's military rulers had her under house arrest for 15 years. In 1991, she won the Nobel Peace Prize. However, after becoming part of the government, she has routinely denied reports of ethnic cleansing and defended the military. A first ruling on the case and whether or not the Rohingya should be protected is expected within weeks. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, London.
Analysts have warned that continuing power cuts in South Africa could plunge the country's economy into recession. The blackouts have resulted in mining companies cutting back on their major operations, businesses operating a few hours a day, tourism taking a hit, thieves having a field day, and President Cyril Ramaphosa being forced to cut short his trip in Egypt. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
State-owned utility Eskom has struggled for weeks to provide South Africa with enough electricity. It announced Monday that it was taking 6,000 megawatts off the national grid, causing shockwaves across the economy. The power utility blamed old systems and infrastructure, the rain and maintenance backlogs for the power cuts, which have extended up to 8 hours per day in some places. The world's third largest platinum mine, Impala, immediately announced that it was shutting down its underground operations. Johan Teron is the company's spokesperson.
One production shift lost would be about 100 million in revenue that we would lose for one day. I think the impact is far greater on our suppliers and some of our contractors.
Petra Diamonds, a diamond mining company, and Harmony Gold also halted their operations at Eskom's request. Chifiwa Chivengwa, CEO of the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, says the tourism sector, which contributed a total of over $28 billion to the country's economy in 2017, has also been hard hit.
Big hotels have to go out and suddenly buy large generators to power up their buildings to ensure that they can deliver on the promise. Now, what we need to do is to have some certainty when it comes to electricity supply, because running generators is costly.
While big business have been able to buy high-capacity generators to power their systems, Siyabonga Zigode, a small food business operator in Durban, says small businesses will close without quick action.
Government definitely have to make a plan, because now we can't live like this. I mean, we have to serve customers cold food and whatnot. So it's affecting the business big time.
Unfortunately, Bonke Dumisa, an economist, says there seems to be no light at the end of Eskom's tunnel after years of operating in the red.
I'm an eternal optimist, but this time around, I cannot deceive anyone. We are definitely going to have another contraction. We are likely to end up with a negative economic growth rate, which will be a first time in a very long time.
And Ian Cruikshanks, chief economist at the Center for Risk Analysis, says Eskom has become a huge risk to the economy.
We're probably heading towards a recession. The third quarter was negative, 0.6%. The fourth quarter, I think, is rushing really headlong towards another downswing, and that's where we are.
The electricity crisis forced President Ramaphosa to abruptly abandon his Egypt trip to deal with the electricity crisis. Ramaphosa has assured the nation that a solution will be found. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thousands of protesters marched through central Algiers today demanding the cancellation of tomorrow's presidential election. Marchers shouted they would not vote as rioter police blocked roads and pushed them back to contain the demonstration. Pro-democracy protesters have been on the streets since February, and in April forced former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika to resign after 20 years in power. The protesters say they want all members of the old elite out of office. The powerful military has had considerable control over the country since independence in 1962. All five presidential candidates are linked to the Bouteflika government. The candidates have been taunted with insults during the campaign and have avoided regions known to be hostile to the political elite. If none of the candidates wins more than 50% of the vote, there will be a runoff vote. Measles vaccination teams in southern Cameroon have been attacked and beaten by locals who say the vaccination shots triggered side effects that send 12 children to local hospitals. Many rural Cameroonians distrust vaccination campaigns, which were organized as part of a national initiative to stop a measles outbreak that has afflicted a number of children. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from Ibolowa in southern Cameroon.
34-year-old Samuel Amugu, a vaccination agent in Cameroon's southern commercial town of Ibolowa, is still recovering from wounds inflicted by angry parents who oppose the vaccination campaign. He says Roman Catholic clergy transported him and five other vaccinators to the Obolova Regional Hospital after angry parents harassed them last Friday in front of a local government school.
They did not want to hear any explanation. They did not allow me to speak. I just got blue on my face and all over my body, severe beating on my face and all over my body.
At the same hospital, Etala Souza, a 35-year-old trader and father of two, says his son also suffered the effects of the vaccine and has been hospitalized for several days.
Il est rentré de l'école à 17h. On nous a fait comprendre à l'école qu'ils avaient une campagne de vaccination.
Souza says after his son came home from school feeling tired, running a fever and vomiting, he, Souza, was told about the vaccination campaign for children in all schools. Souza says he was told by the child's driver that the youngster threw up several times in the car. Cameroon organized the national vaccination campaign last week to stop the measles outbreak it said had infected more than 3,000 people, especially children, in 2019. The health ministry reported that the most affected area was in the Central African state's northern border with Nigeria and Chad, where 17 children had died this month. The government said, but for the south region, where the towns of Ebolova and Sangmelima are located, the vaccination campaign went well in the country's nine other administrative regions. Nurse Christelle Menadji of the Obolova Regional Hospital says medical staff attended to 12 children who suffered side effects of the vaccination. She says none of them died, as some people had claimed on social media.
Le premier cas, l'enfant a commencé à faire la diarrhée et à vomir.
She says the first case they received was that of a two-year-old whose diarrhea and vomiting led to severe fatigue, and the second was that of a three-year-old who had a convulsion and fever a day after she received a dose of measles and rubella vaccine. She says they had been told to be ready to handle such cases during the vaccination campaign because there are normal reactions for some vaccinated babies. Many parents in Cameroon's south region do not trust vaccinations. They say traditional healers carry out traditional treatment that protects children. Many prefer African traditional medical practitioners who are more accessible and available than hospitals that often are very far from home, understaffed and lack medication. Others say Western countries create vaccines to stop children from being able to have babies when they are of childbearing age. Some say the vaccinations are trial drugs that may paralyze their babies. Others claim their religious practices prohibit them from having children vaccinated. Dr. Jedi Dapnet, the highest government officer supervising the vaccination campaign in Cameroon's south region, says such allegations are unfounded. He says officials have given instructions for all affected children to be taken to the nearest health centers.
All the children who go to the hospital with some effect of the vaccine should be taken care free of charge. Reuse vaccines that are going to expire in 2021. They are the vaccine that we are already using in routine immunization programs. So we just take the same vaccine to use during the campaign.
Cameroon's health ministry reports that progress has been made in persuading parents to have their children vaccinated. Vaccination coverage in towns is estimated at 80%, but in some villages in the country's hinterlands, barely half, 3 out of every 10 children are vaccinated. The last vaccination campaign between December 4 and December 8 targeted 3.3 million children between the ages of 9 months old and the age of 5. The government says it is still considering launching a catch-up exercise for measles. The disease is caused by a virus that is spread through the air by breathing, coughing, or sneezing. Measles is said to be highly contagious and can remain in the air, ready to infect for up to 2 hours. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Ebolova in southern Cameroon.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Somali security forces shot dead 5 suspected al-Shabaab militants to end an attack on a hotel near the presidential residence in Mogadishu. Officials today said they are investigating the attack, which began Tuesday evening at the Seal Hotel and went on until early morning. The al-Shabaab group of militant Islamists claimed responsibility for the attack, which caused the deaths of 3 civilians and 2 soldiers. Police say 11 other people were injured. Al-Shabaab is linked to the Al-Qaeda militant group. For years, it has battled Somalia's government, which has the backing of the United Nations. The Gambian government has issued a permit for a protest march by a group that is pressing President Adama Barrow to live up to a campaign promise to resign after 3 years. The group calls itself Operation 3 Years Jotna. Reporter Pandera Mbai has more.
The march is scheduled for Monday. In a Wolof local dialect, 3 years Jotna means Barrow's 3-year transitional rule has ended. The group is calling on Barrow to respect his campaign promises. He came to power in December 2016 after defeating Dikiru Yaya Jammeh in a disputed election. He had promised to rule for only 3 years and would not take part in future elections. Barrow has since walked away from his promise. He is working on setting up a political party which he intends to launch in the new year. Pas Samba Jow is a Gambian political analyst. Joe approached the government's move to issue a permit for the protest march.
This is a welcome move. We supposedly live in a democracy, and the right to protest must always be guaranteed and respected. I am just also equally happy that the police and the government acted maturely in this case by opening lines of communication with the 3-year Jotna folks where they could agree to disagree and then at least come to an understanding. So now the police will be able to provide the needed security, and the Gambians who are protesting will be able to exercise their right to protest.
Government spokesman Ibrahim Ajis Sankare notes that the decision by the police inspector general of police to issue permit was in line with the constitution, which he says guaranteed the protesters' right to peaceful protest. The protesters plan to give a statement on their opposition to a government representative to pass on to Barrow. Supporters of Barrow say it is wrong for anyone to compel the president to resign. One of them is Andrew Singate, the president of the Barrow Youth Movement.
5 years is the president's constitutional mandate, and the constitution gave him 5 years to run it. So I think let them wait till 2021. They can go for election with the president. But as for now, the president is going to serve for his 5 years. That's his constitutional mandate.
Pas Samba Jow held a different view.
I don't think there is anything wrong with what they are doing, because in as much as Barrow was also voted into office, Barrow made certain promises. And Gambia would not be the first country where people have taken the streets to try to hold politicians to account, especially to hold them to promises that they have made.
Meanwhile, the government has called on the diplomatic and consular corps to go about their normal businesses. For VOA Africa, this is pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Sudan's Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok says his nation has been a victim of terrorism and pledges to partner with the United States. He made these remarks at an event in Washington, D.C. VOA Salim Salamon was there and has the story.
During his recent visit to Washington, Sudan's Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok said one goal looms above all others as he leads the country's transitional government, bringing peace to the war-ravaged nation.
Our number one and top priority is to stop the war and build the foundation of sustainable peace, essentially to stop the sufferings of our people in the IDP camps and refugee camps. We think the opportune time of stopping this war is now.
Hamdok did not specify which war he meant. Sudan's government has been fighting rebels in the Darfur, South Kordofan, and Blue Nile regions for years. The capital, Khartoum, saw deadly conflicts between protesters and the military earlier this year. He did say he was heartened by the resiliency on display when he visited the Zamzam camp for internally displaced people in Darfur, where war that began in 2003 has never entirely stopped.
Our people in the IDP camps, with all the sufferings and the miseries they went through, it taught them, educated them, and made them strong enough to be able to say, from now onwards, we know what is good for ourselves, and nobody can dictate on us anything. This is very liberating.
Unlike the administration of his predecessor, Omar al-Bashir, Hamdok's government has pledged to allow unfettered access to aid organizations to reach those in need. Hamdok spoke at the Atlantic Council, a foreign policy think tank in Washington. He visited the American capital in an effort to repair Sudan's relationship with the U.S., which was strained to non-existent during the entire 30-year reign of former Sudan President Omar al-Bashir, who the military ousted in April after months of mass protests. One of Hamdok's goals is for the U.S. to remove Sudan from the list of state sponsors of terrorism. Sudan was put on the list in 1993 at a time when al-Qaeda founder Osama bin Laden was living in Khartoum. Although Sudan is still on the list, the two countries agreed to resume diplomatic relations and exchange ambassadors. U.S. officials have said the process of removing Sudan from the terrorism list will be a long one. Hamdok stressed that his country is prepared to meet the requirements, which may include paying restitution to victims of terrorist attacks.
We are Sudanese as a people. We've never supported terrorism or anything that sort. It was the former regime that supported this. You know, we are also, as a nation, victims of terrorism that inflicted on us by the former regime. But we accepted this as a corporate responsibility. And we are negotiating.
Hamdok, an economist and diplomat who has worked for the UN, was named the country's transitional prime minister in August. In deference to the leading role women played in the revolution, Hamdok made history by naming four women to his cabinet. Wala Isam Abdurrahman is a minister of youth and sports and was an activist who participated in sit-ins and street protests. She and other activists faced live fire and tear gas and were forced to go into hiding in between protests in fear of reprisals from security forces.
So it was very dangerous. But the more that they were more aggressive, the more that we went to the street. That's why we went so far and we managed to achieve this.
Now, Abdurrahman and others are seeking to institute a series of changes, including legal and political reforms, paving the way for a democratic, free and fair elections in 2022.
The road is not easy, but I think we went so far, and we're very determined to reach to the final, you know, destination of this transitional period. Because I always say that these 3 years is part of the revolution. It's another level. We finished, you know, the level of protesting and marching. Now we need to build the new Sudan.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, 2019 has been the year of Ghanaians in the diaspora returning to their roots in their West African homeland. The year of return on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.